Welcome to State Affairs, and today is a Thursday, April 16th, and the time, I can't, there's the way the light's hitting on it, it's probably
9:15,
so, and we have with us today Senator French, Senator Kukesh, as well as Senator Meyer, our Vice Chair, and Senator Linda Menard. So with that, I would ask if you have any electronic devices at all, would you please turn them down, turn them totally off, I'm sorry, as well as committee members, okay? And then this is my aide, Debbie Prater, that's busy at work here too. Okay, so we'll begin with the first bill. We have several on the agenda, and we're going to try to move them as fast as we can, but still do proper due diligence so that we are in compliance with what we should be doing here as committee members. So having said that, let's start with Senate Bill 189, Concealed Weapons Pardon. And this morning, Senator Huggins is the sponsor of the bill. Is his aide, Sharon Long, prepared to come up and speak to the bill? Could you come up and state your affiliation and your name? Thank you for the record. Are we ready to go, Sue? And yeah. Good.
Good morning, Chairwoman Menard and members of the committee. My name is Sharon Long. I'm aide to Senator Charlie Huggins, who sends his apologies for not being able to be here this morning. He's in Finance Committee. SB 189 provides that felons who have received a pardon or who have received a set-aside after a suspended imposition of sentence will be allowed to possess concealed firearms without restrictions. There are many citizens who have faltered in the past, paid their debt to society, turned their lives around, and become valuable contributing members of society. We acknowledge their rehabilitation and welcome them back to society sometimes, in the case of felons, with only partially restored civil rights. A select exemplary few come to the attention of presidents and governors, pursue and endure a thorough, lengthy, and arduous clemency process, and receive a pardon. Others, due to youthful indiscretions and other mitigating factors, are deemed by the courts to be worthy of an SIS and receive a set-aside. It is to those few who have proven worthy of a pardon or SIS to whom this legislation is directed. The intention of SB 189 is for those individuals to regain their right to bear arms.
Okay. Are there any questions from committee members? So we understand that this bill is to make it so people who have received pardons and set-asides under Alaska law are eligible now to possess guns under the federal law. Is this true, and does this bill accomplish this?
That was the instructions to the drafters. And Senator Menard, we have Jerry Lockup from Legislative Affairs here, who understands fully how the tentacles of the federal law and the state law intertwine and have, in some places, conspired to prevent folks with pardons and SISs in our state have prevented them regaining their concealed carry rights. And he's here today if you would like to ask him some questions.
What is the wish of the committee? Would you like to?
I'd like to hear from Jerry.
Okay, Jerry.
He's a good man.
Would you come forward, please, and state your name? Do you have any other testimony? Okay.
For the record, my name is Jerry Luckup, Legislative Counsel for the Division of Legal Services. Senator Menard, that's the intent of the bill.
Okay.
It's to resolve this issue with, based upon a U.S. Supreme Court case called Crone, where the U.S. Supreme Court said that a restriction under state law prevents a felon from who has received a restoration of rights, whether by pardon, set aside, or by operation of time. A restriction under state law prevents that felon from receiving the rights to possess firearms under federal law back. from having their rights to possess firearms under federal law restored. So this is intended to do that.
Okay.
From talking to Mr. Judy out in the hall, they now believe that this doesn't do that, even though this was something they seemed to think would work. In my own discussions with ATF last year, this seemed to satisfy their concerns when I talked to an ATF agent up in Anchorage. But I guess that's something we'll explore.
Okay. Senator French.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning, Jerry. How are you, Mr. Luckup? I have also filed a bill on this general topic, and I have to say it's one of the more mystifying and difficult areas of the law to work your way through, and I appreciate you bringing your expertise to the table. I also appreciate the NRA bringing their expertise to the table, because I think it's important to try to get it right the first time. And so I guess the first thing off the top of my head is there any likelihood, in your view, of getting a letter from ATF or from the relevant federal authorities to guide us? Because I think this is an area of law where we could probably talk about it for a couple weeks and still not be entirely sure, you know, what we need to do. And so, you know, guidance from the federales would might, you know, lower everybody's concern about what's right and what's not right. Thank you.
Thank you. And let the record reflect that Senator Pascavan has joined us.
Sorry, I was tardy.
That's okay. Do you have any other members have any questions? Okay.
Can you answer that one?
Yes, I'm sorry.
through the chair, Senator French, they were not too willing to put anything on paper when I talked to them last year. And, you know, this seems to be a floating standard from my own and from my discussions with Mr. Judy out in the hall. We have different views of how this would apply and how the feds are going to interpret it. It's certainly possible, and it would be worth an effort to contact ATF in DC and see if they would be willing to provide some definitive answers. But as of now, we don't have any definitive answers. We're kind of left trying to interpret what they may do on something. This meets, you know, the way I read Carone, this meets Carone, and your bill meets Carone for the different directions each bill provides. Your bill is a little broader. Senator Huggins' bill restricts the where they're going to the people that receive pardons and set-asides, and not for the 10-year lapse of time felons. And your bill reaches all of them, and basically is attempting to meet Carone for all felons in Alaska that currently are restricted.
Follow up, Senator.
Follow
Finch.
Up. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't want to turn this into a Judiciary Committee hearing, but is it possible for you to go to the sort of relevant passage in Carone and give it to us just to help us orient our thinking?
Well, I have a copy of Carone here.
Is there one little tiny part that explains the legal problem, or is it one of the, because I haven't frankly not had the time to read that case. It's been on my list of things to do for some time, but I just haven't been able to get it.
Well, Carone dealt with a Massachusetts law that permitted felons to possess long guns but not handguns. And Carone was not really a good person. He had various run-ins with the law over a period of 30 years. And the feds received word that he was now possessing various rifles, long guns, and under federal law, he wasn't entitled to possess any handguns and long guns, I guess. Because Massachusetts law did not allow felons ever to get the right back to possess handguns, except when they were on their own property or own businesses. The feds said this prevents him from receiving his rights to generally possess firearms under federal law back, because there was this restriction that prevented him from possessing handguns. So it was no longer...
Under state law.
Under state law.
Right.
And the federal law, 18 U.S.C. 922, is written in terms of you get your federal rights back if you have a... If the state has provided you, or the state or the federal government has provided you with a restoration of rights, and that restoration of rights is full and complete and doesn't have restrictions on it. And so the way most states work it, including us, we provide a restoration of rights both to people that receive a restoration of rights, like a pardon or a set-aside, but we also, by lapse of a period of time, we also give felons their rights back. And that's what happened in Massachusetts, but it was limited. It was only limited long guns, what they could get back. And the U.S. Supreme Court said that because this was not a full and complete restoration of rights, your rights to possess handguns was limited, therefore you didn't have a corresponding right under federal law. You never received a restoration of rights under federal law.
And that, if I may, Madam Chair, that seems to be sort of the question. The question is whether or not you had a full and complete restoration of your rights. And absent a full and complete restoration of your rights under state law, I think the NRA is taking the position that any restriction under state law is going to trigger a ban under federal law. Is that generally where we are?
I think that's where they are. And I don't read Crone that far, but, you know.
People can differ.
Mm-hmm. People can differ,
right.
Obviously.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? If it's okay, if there's no objection, my intent is to maybe not move this out and just work on this a little bit more in depth. And I appreciate the sponsor of the bill efforts, but obviously I think we need to, with so many short hours left in this session, probably do a little bit more work on this next year. So if there's not any objection to that. Okay, thank you very much. And there's no one else to be heard. Did you want to speak? I'm sorry. Did you sign up to speak?
No, I did, and I apologize.
But I can certainly yield to that if it's okay with the other members. Would you like to take a seat and identify your name, please, and your affiliation as well?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Brian Judy. I'm the Alaska State Liaison for the National Rifle Association. I apologize for I was in a discussion out there and I
That's okay. That's all right.
Didn't get to the sign-up sheet. I guess I'll try to be brief since it seems like this is going to be put over.
Mm-hmm.
But it is the existing policy of the state law in Alaska to provide a restoration of rights to these individuals, either through a pardon or through a set-aside or through the lapsing of a significant amount of time. However, and also it's been discussed, the federal government recognizes that restoration. But the key is it has to be a full and complete restoration. And there have been some additional cases since the Crone decision and also the, interpretations by ATF and FBI and what how this body of law is progressing, according to our counsel and our research, is that if it's not full and complete, that is, if these individuals don't have the exact same rights as other individuals do, then for the purposes of federal law, it isn't a full and complete restoration. So this bill would go part of the way, in our view, for those people with set-asides and with pardons. Obviously, although it's the state policy for people with the 10-year lapsing to have their rights restored, they would clearly not have their rights restored under this bill. But because our attorneys look at this as incomplete because it remains an affirmative defense. In other words, it's presumptively illegal for these people to possess a handgun, either in and of itself or concealed, then they have to mount the defense. So they can be arrested, charged, prosecuted, incarcerated, and then have to defend themselves. That does not happen to other individuals. So it in fact isn't a full and complete restoration. So while we support the concept of the bill, I think it doesn't go as far as is intended, and it's probably going to take a lot of fleshing out over the next 9 months.
Okay, and we appreciate that testimony. Senator French?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Judy and I had this conversation over the telephone, but I just thought I'd bring it to the attention of the members because it's sticky. There are two prohibitions under our law with respect to a felon's right to have or not have a handgun after having been convicted. One is subsection 1 of the statute that we're amending, and that subsection says you can't knowingly possess a firearm capable of being concealed. So that'd be, you know, a handgun. Let's just call it a handgun. So you can't do that. You can't possess a firearm capable of being concealed. And so I would say that would be a handgun in your home. Right? If you live there in a home yourself, all the possessions in there are yours. If you have a handgun in your house after you've been convicted of a felony, that's contrary to law. The subsection we're amending, though, is different from that one. It says you can't knowingly possess a firearm that is concealed on your person. So that's a gun, you know, in your pocket. Mm-hmm. And the question I've had for Mr. Judy is, how does fixing the one statute, the statute that refers to a gun that's in your pocket, cure the problem if we still have a parallel statute on the broader idea of possession, that is a handgun in your home? So I'll pose that to you, and again, I think it's a question we're going to wrestle with for a little time.
Madam Chair, Senator French, that's a good question, and our council believes that that's the problem. If you address the affirmative defense for the carrying concealed, then you're going part of the way. But in our view, not only do you need to address that, but you also need to change the affirmative defense to an exception for the carrying concealed prohibition, and for that separate mere possession of a handgun. Because there are two separate offenses, there are two separate sections providing affirmative defenses. The affirmative defense for the carrying concealed is more extensive. But our view is that unless you narrow that, the conditions for the affirmative defense, and then also change it from an affirmative defense to an exception, it's not a full and complete restoration.
Okay, thank you. And again, I'm comfortable with not trying to fix this on the fly and taking some more time to really get it right. Thank you. I do have someone off, Nat, so out of a courtesy, even though I was just about to close public testimony, we'll go ahead and let Carl Thomas. Carl Thomas?
Yes, ma'am.
Would you state your name and affiliation, please, for our record?
My name is Carl Thomas, T-H-O-M-A-S. I have an affiliation.
Okay, could you speak into your mic? You're breaking up just a little bit.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Go ahead and give testimony, please.
My name is Carl Palmer. I'm calling in regard to support SB-189. In essence, I was convicted of non-violent felony. I was sentenced to a term of suspended imposition of sentence. My rights were restored in every way, except when I went and tried to purchase a brand new firearm. I was denied by Nick. After Fed filing a voluntary appeal to them, the reason Nix denied my right to purchase a firearm was case law that they cited. Carnes versus the United States, since Alaska state law restricts where a felon can possess a firearm, I am then considered to be federally prohibited by this decision. Since my case is set aside and all rights restored, I should be able to purchase firearms, but I was not allowed to. The purchase of firearms, which is an infringement on my right, since they have been fully restored with no restriction. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. Okay. Okay, with that, we'll go ahead and close public testimony, and again, we'll just bring this bill back at a later date. Next on the agenda, we have Committee Substitute H. Bill 14. Eliminating daylight savings time question. Okay, eliminating daylight. Is the sponsor here?
Yes, she's in the hall.
Just stepped out.
Anna Ferguson.
Okay.
She was right.
Anna or Crystal, you're here. Are you prepared to? Representative Faircloth is multitasking today, as most of us are. And we have several off net, and I will try to limit that testimony maybe to 1 or 2 minutes so we can get through it. Okay, Crystal, would you be prepared now to, could you state your name and affiliation, please?
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Crystal Kieneman, staff to Representative Anna Faircloth from District 17. As you did mention, she's running back and forth, and she will be joining me here in just a minute. What we have before us is House Bill 19, which is an act exempting the state and its political subdivisions from daylight saving time and providing for an effective date. We have been doing a lot of research, a lot of discussion with constituents and the people of Alaska, and this was brought to our attention by some of our constituents, so which is why we have it before you. There's been a lot of talk on health issues with daylight saving time, safety issues, and just the overall, you know, annoyance of, you know, why we do it and, you know, what the benefits to that are.
If you can take a breath, just a second, Representative Faircloth, thank you and welcome. Okay, continue, or I didn't mean to break up your...
Chairman Bedard, committee members, thank you for hearing our bill. Some say that daylight saving time just doesn't mean very much, and it's a frivolous issue to be taking up, certainly at this time in the state legislature. Madam Chair, I waited for 2 years to bring this forward and have people that are very concerned in my community with many of the aspects that daylight savings time inflicts on their lives. We sent a letter out to the general public, and I hope you have a copy of that and had a chance to review it. We have done all that we could to reach out to those in favor of the repeal and those in opposition. To try to make it brief for the committee, I know we provided a detailed report. I sat down with Senator French and bent his ear for over 15 or 20 minutes on this issue, as well as my staff has been with all of your staff. There are polls. It's the first tab in your binder. Alaskans support the repeal of daylight saving time. Some of them are anecdotal, the KTUU poll most recently. The Alaska State Chamber did a poll that showed an exact opposite, that businesses are concerned, that a high percentage of the businesses are in opposition. But I did send an email back from that poll and asked them if they could tell me geographically where those businesses were located, because what I found is we have geographic differences in whether people support the repeal or are opposed to the repeal. But there have been two statewide surveys done that say most Alaskans support the repeal, and those are included in your packet. Truly, Alaska is the land of the midnight sun, where daylight and dusk really don't mean a lot to many Alaskans for most of the year. As an example, in tab number 2, that's the white tab in your binder, we try to point out to you that in Nome it takes 10 days to make up the hour. In Fairbanks it takes 10 days to make up that hour that we jump forward. In Anchorage it's 12 days. Juneau it's 13. In Seattle I believe it's somewhere between 13 and 14. We've come a long way since we argued about wax and wicks in World War I, or back when Benjamin Franklin and people of his time started talking about, could we really manipulate energy consumption and save wax and wicks. We have air conditioners that run in the evening now, and cooling systems that are much different in energy consumption. So I would say that times have changed, and people believe, the general public, Alaskans believe, that technology is there to help mitigate some of the challenges that the Department of Commerce's and small businesses around Alaska believe that they face in eliminating daylight saving time. I want to point out some of the shortfalls, and then I'll give you the best reason to vote no. Schools across our state predominantly do not support daylight saving time. We had over 500 people respond to us with individual emails. I'm happy to provide them to you, but we do provide you a list that we've blinded the people's names, but given you occupations if we had them, as well as locations. We tried to send back to them and ask what part of the state that they represent. But overwhelmingly, schools were disadvantaged for a period of 2 to 5 to 10 days, depending on the location, with increased restlessness in the classroom. Teachers are saying that test scores change, and school boards are taking up the issue throughout our state right now, trying to figure out whether they can take formal positions. And I would point out that Wrangell is in opposition, and Wrangell is located in Southeast, but we do have a resolution in here in opposition to the repeal from Wrangell. So I just want to make sure that we highlight those that have concerns too. So the schools have said there's problems, and I'll support those school problems with some science in just a moment. Other challenges for our labor workforce is safety. We have people, and I've provided for you a sample of the first student safety alert of people who come to work a bit tired because they choose actively, knowing we're going on to DST, not to get that extra hour of sleep and go to bed earlier. But again, to point out any shortfalls, we did contact the Anchorage Police Department, somebody that we could get statistical data from, and the hour increase does reduce accidents on our road because of the transportation, and conversely, in the fall, it goes back up when we plunge people back into darkness. So safety appears to increase on the road, and we don't have anything definitive about other incidences overall in the general population being tired. As far as energy goes, we asked Chugach Electric, again trying to get local Alaska data, if they saw their usage go up or down. It was a little surprising. We only have one snapshot of 1 year, but the energy consumption did go down the weekend following the implementation of daylight saving time, but it was pretty surprising that the following weekend it actually went up. And so what we found out is weather had much more to do than daylight saving time at all with energy consumption, at least with that particular point. The best reason I can give you for stopping this madness of flipping clocks and wasting people's time of going back and forth are the health issues, and that's why I'm before you today. In March of 2009, the New England Journal of Medicine published a report from Stockholm, Sweden that has a 20-year study in it showing that heart attack rates increase the first 3 to 5 days by 5% when we go off or when we jump on to daylight saving time. There is an impact when you fall off, but I think everyone enjoys the extra hour sleep a lot more than losing it. There's also a study from Germany in 2008 that shows that there is a sensitivity to those who suffer from seasonal affective disorder or depression with a change in people's biological clocks and changing time off and on. At that point, some people push back to me and say, well, Anne, everybody gets on a plane and we suffer jet lag. Well, that's true, and your body does take its toll doing that, but you actively choose to do that, and you know that you need to get more sleep. So you either fly in early or you make up that sleep at another point. But your health is being put at risk, and as the more we can talk about that, the better it is. Schools have actually said, and that's what supports this particular concept, in that we've been told by doctors that you have those letters in your packet too, that youth have a harder time with their circadian rhythm as far as the readjustment. So as an adult, when we choose to fly to New York or to Washington, D.C., I've never been to New York for the record, but Boston or somewhere on the East Coast, our bodies adjust quicker, but children, youth, have a slower, their hypothalamus is not fully developed, and they can't change times back and forth as easily as we can, and that supports what we're hearing in the schools. So if I could ask my staff if I've forgotten any of the highlights, oh, the biggest reason why you should vote no. I didn't give you that one. Mm-hmm. There are genuine concerns in the business industry, and the best argument that I think is the inconsistency of time mm-hmm. that would happen if we were off and the rest of the nation was on. Mm-hmm. But truly, I think this is a three-step process, and you have what I believe is the right first step, and that is having Alaskans stop risking their health and just staying on a consistent time. You should know that other states have already done this. Hawaii is not on daylight saving time. Arizona is not. Indiana just went on it in 2006 and actually had an increase to their state budget, I believe, of $9 million of increased energy use. So we're not alone in this struggle. But the second step is, which I have a resolution that you will see next year, asking the federal government to stop the madness. And the third is has just been introduced, I believe, or will be introduced today, and that's to look at time zones. Western Alaska is a disadvantage, and I just would leave you with, when it's high noon in Western Alaska, their clocks say 3 o'clock. So they are always off of their biological rhythms. And it's just not healthy, and that's why we're before you today.
And Representative, I compliment your efforts in preparing this bill. I mean, you have just truly just done such a thorough job of explaining and articulating what this bill is, why it's such concern. So the only question I think that is necessary, the reason I have some questions about eliminating daylight savings times, I've been in the dental field for 37 years, and we often have to get to the East Coast or get with the insurance companies to see, yes, are they really, and now we're going to add, you know, 1 hour on top of that. And I think you've articulated and spoke to that as well. But just from a personal point of view, it's always difficult when you're seeing that emergency patient and you're, by the time 1 o'clock comes, they're already closed. So unless you do due diligence right away when you've got that patient, it's always been a big stumbling block. And of course, this bill, then we would add another hour.
Madam Chair, if I could comment on that very briefly. I worked in the retail management for years and had to contact the East Coast. And I ask businesses that are in opposition with that particular concern what time they start work. Typically, the staff come in, owners probably are there night and day, but the staff comes in about 8 o'clock. And so I always made a list and made sure that I called the East Coast right away when I got to work, exactly how you describe it. And every time I called at 8 a.m. trying to get my day over, they were out to lunch because a 4 hours difference puts them out to lunch. And so I understand that that we would have to recognize seven months of the year we would be 4 hours off, and 7 months or 5 months of the year we would be 4 hours off and 2 hours off Seattle and one. But that's why I said it's a three-step process, and I truly believe from the health, for health reasons, that this should be the first step.
Thank you very much. Committee members, anyone questions of the sponsor?
Just more of a comment than anything else, and I say this in jest, but I have to say it. I want to commend you for bringing us a bill that's opposed by the Chamber of Commerce. They oppose all of my bills, so I'm happy to at least consider giving you a vote just for that reason alone. And Mr. Stevens knows I'm joking as well. They don't oppose all my bills, but I just had to say it. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator French. Senator Coote, anybody else? Question? Okay. Okay, a question from Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Faircloth, refresh my memory. Why did we do this at the federal level again? Was it for the farmers so they'd have more time out in the fields? Or how did this madness, as you say, get started?
We have the history in your packet that's a little bit better defined. But as I understand it, during World War One and again in World War Two, America was faced with energy shortages and believed that if we went dark, that we could save money. And the farmers got brought into it, that they were already in bed or up. But our research shows that the farming community is in opposition and has been for years to farming. We have some really cute article that is meant totally tongue-in-cheek, that chickens hate daylight saving time, and what it's speaking to is farmers do not like daylight saving time because the cows have to be milked when the cows have to be milked, and the chickens lay when the chickens lay, and when we try to mess with Mother Nature by jumping our clocks, it just doesn't work. But there's more of it here. I mean, Chris, my staff could give you the detailed history if you'd like.
No, the reason why I asked is I was always brought up on a farm, and I couldn't see any advantage to the farmers, but I know they always got credit for it. The other question, Madam Chair, if I may. Mm-hmm. So if I understand how this would work, half the year or part of the year would be 5 hours different with the East Coast, and then part of the year would be 4 hours different. Okay. Would that That seems to make things even more confusing than they are now.
Madam Chair, Representative Meyer, if you deal with Arizona and Hawaii, it's already happening. It just depends on the level to which you deal with marketers that those decisions are based on a specific time. You still would have 3 hours to communicate. I believe the same 3 hours that you have now because they're out to lunch, and I don't mean that flip. I mean we can't get a hold of them when they take a break during the day. But it is confusing. They would spring forward. We would not. And more Alaskans would live. And I think that's a good thing.
Okay, thank you again. Is there any other follow-ups? Okay, we do have, let me go ahead and ask if anyone in the audience wants to give testimony. So, and they didn't, did you, have you signed up though? Okay, so let me see. I know we have one, we have several that are just looking for, come forward, sir, and state your name and affiliation, and then I'll go to OffNet. Fairbanks, Anchorage, Wrangell, Glen Allen, Nome, and Cordova. I don't have your slip here. Thank you. And you're Wayne Stevens.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Good morning. Wayne Stevens, President and CEO of the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce. And through the chair to Senator French, it's not intentional. the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce believes there will be unforeseen economic difficulties associated with the passage of House Bill 19. State Chamber supports any proposal to eliminate daylight savings times at the federal level, as a federal change would uniformly maintain the current differentiation in time zones across the United States. Passage of HB 19 should be delayed until a thorough exploration of the economic effects on Alaska's businesses can be provided. Many of the state's businesses and industries conduct business with contiguous U.S. companies. Eliminating DST in Alaska will likely disadvantage Alaskan businesses by reducing the number of hours to interface with business partners, advisors, customers, and suppliers for a substantial portion of the calendar year. Private sector finance communities, the Alaska Permanent Fund, along with state and local financial entities, are obviously affected. Many private companies with East Coast and Midwest operations would be negatively affected by increasing the difference in time zone through elimination of DST in Alaska. Digital technology, which already incorporates daylight savings time changes, would need additional programming for Alaskan residents. Current technology would not be synchronized with other states. This is particularly evident with software such as Windows and other calendaring programs that uniformly distribute across the U.S. It is important that Alaskans be assured that vendors will be willing to provide program patches in a timely manner to all equipment and devices, be it cell phones, PDAs, medical equipment, or computer operating systems that have been programmed to adjust automatically their internal clocks to match the time changes to daylight savings times. For the aforementioned reasons, the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce does not support HB 19. We would support a federal elimination of daylight savings time, thus leveling all states equally and allowing Alaska to take advantage of any health benefit through the elimination of daylight savings times.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Stevens. If it's okay with the committee, do you have a question, Mr. Sear? I'm going to run down.
I see you've got a lot of public testimony, so I'll hold off.
Thank okay, you. And we'll just kind of hold our question. Thank you, Mr. Stevens. Appreciate it. Okay, let's go to Fairbanks. We have Thomas Carpenter.
Yes, do you hear me?
Yes, speak up just a little bit more and state your name and who you're affiliated with, please, for the record.
Name is Thomas Carpenter, that's C-A-R-P-E-N-D-E-R. I live in North Pole, Alaska, and I'm just a resident.
Okay, would you like to give testimony on eliminating daylight savings time?
I would.
You have the floor. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Someone mentioned why we had daylight savings time, and one of the reasons why I figure it is because the folks in Washington, D.C. like to get in an extra night. And so that's why they like it. Most of the electronic stuff that we got nowadays, if you look in the menus of the stuff at Jay, it has a deal whether you want daylight, if Alaska, you know, if Alaska time zone is listed, it's got a checkbox to say if you're on daylight savings time or not. So the electronics is kind of a moot point. There's a website. All you gotta do is Google Alaska Daylight Savings Time. It's the first one on the website. They give plenty of reasons why not, why we shouldn't have it. and the lady that I believe Crystal Kinneman gave most of those reasons about why they shouldn't. And another thing about the electronics, now that they've changed the advancement of daylight savings time, they put it 2 weeks earlier, 2 weeks later, you know, on the federal level, a lot of the older electronics don't even work because if you check the daylight savings time. So around daylight savings time change, you fight some of those older electronic junk, that older electronic junk to do that. So, you know, I mean, the House has spent a great deal of time, it appears on the Alaska website, as to on this subject, and they've come to the conclusion that we don't need it. And now it's in the Senate, and apparently they have to have three hearings, and I guess this is one of the hearings. And I would just like to encourage the Senate to go ahead and hold the other two hearings and get this to the Senate floor for a vote, because I think that you'll find that most of the people in Alaska do not like this. It's a pain. Twice a year you have to fight the clocks and try to figure out what to do, and not to mention the health risks and everything else. So I just want to encourage you to vote to get rid of this thing.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your testimony. We'll move on now to Glenn Allen, Bob Toby from Copper Center. Bob, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Okay, could you state your name, please? Welcome.
My name's Bob Toby, T-O-B-E-Y.
Go ahead and give your testimony, Mr. Toby.
Yes, I'm a small business owner in rural Alaska, and I want to thank you for this opportunity to voice my opposition to this bill. This change will put Alaska in a time zone behind the East Coast for half of the year. As a business owner that deals with the East Coast distributors, this change will cost me time, money, and added inconvenience. The added delay to the lower 48 also increases the difficulty in communications with family and friends. Outside travel and connections become more difficult. While Alaska is different from the lower 48, we should not increase our isolation by adding another hour delay time into the time zones. Those of us present in the 70s remember the difficulties we had when there were more than 1 to 4 hours off of the lower 48 time zones. Health studies that I have read supporting this bill only look at the impacts of 1 hour loss on individuals for 1 day a year. What about the health loss and inconvenience many Alaskans will have on a much more frequent basis when conducting business? I feel sure a detailed study of the real costs, both health-wise and monetarily, to Alaskans of this increased time separation would be overwhelmingly negative and far outweigh the brief benefit of 1 hour extra sleep once a year. I do support one time zone, but one time period, but if we have to do something, it would be far better for Alaska to stay on daylight saving time, and then at least for half of the year, we'd only be 3 hours separated from the East Coast. Thank you for the opportunity to express my concerns.
And thank you for that quick wrap-up. We appreciate that, Bob. Okay, now we're going to go to Wrangell. Paula Rack. Paula?
Paula Rack, name is spelled R-A-K, and I'm representing myself. I am opposed to this bill, as I have been every time it comes up in the past 20, 30 years. Basically, when we first joined time zones, when we switched from four time zones to two, Southeast compromised by losing that extra hour of daylight in the evening so that we could be on the same time zone as Anchorage. And Anchorage went the opposite way. But it was a compromise, and we're not happy about it, but nonetheless, that's the way it is. If we were to eliminate daylight savings time, it would be as if the Rail Belt area is back on their original time zone, and we're just 2 hours off from where we were. We like being on Pacific Standard Time. So it's really not, it's squelching on the deal that we made years ago. The trend in the U.S. is for states to join the time zone, the daylight savings time. There's only one state left that doesn't have the daylight savings and that's Arizona, and that's because it's so inconvenient to be off from your neighbors. Well, frequently daylight savings time has been lengthened. We switch later in the year, we start earlier, and I have heard that what people would eventually like to do is to stay on one time zone all year round and have that time what's now daylight savings. So nobody would change
that. Paula, could you wrap that up? I'm sorry, we're really running out of time and I've got more testimony here. So could you just do a wrap up quickly? Thank you.
Okay. It's basically a lifestyle issue. We would gain an hour in the morning before work, or daylight before work, or when we couldn't use it. The kids would lose an hour of playtime after school. We'd all lose an hour of fishing time after work. It's just not worth the inconvenience.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I would ask the rest of the people that are off net to kind of keep it to 1 to 2 minutes if you can kind of condense what you were going to say. Now we'll go to Anchorage, and I have Lynn Willis from Eagle River.
Good morning.
Could you state your name, please, and who you're affiliated with for our record?
My name is Lynn Willis. I live in Eagle River. I'm representing myself. I have no financial interest in this bill. Thank you for this hearing. I've also submitted a written statement. I strongly support House Bill 19. Alaska's population, according to a 2007 U.S. Census Bureau estimate, is 683,478 people. 683,000 Alaskans who depend on knowing the time of day to live their lives are impacted by daylight saving. There ought to be a clear and compelling reason to keep a law that has such public impact. Is that clear and compelling reason energy savings? No. Hearings this year have again failed to show a reduction of energy costs to Alaskans attributable to DST. Is a clear and compelling reason public safety? No. While State Department of Transportation data at an earlier hearing showed vehicle accidents in 2009 decreased following onset of DST, the DOT provided the important caveat that this data was dependent on the weather. Of course, outdoor activity is safer in daylight. However, when you delay the time of sunset, you delay the time of sunrise the next morning. Making it safer for outdoor activity in the evening light makes the same activity less safe in the next morning's darkness. Is a clear and compelling reason public health? No. Daylight saving impacts on human circadian rhythm. Daylight saving forces a change to our internal clock exactly in the same manner as travel between time zones. Recent studies are quantifying the effects of sleep disturbance. There is now a credible study showing an increase in health problems attributable to the onset of this sleep-created jet lag and the resulting sleep disturbance. Is the clear and compelling reason for DST that it is necessary for commerce? No. Alaskan business now includes relations with nations of the Pacific Rim where DST is not used. Hawaii, Arizona, and the Canadian province of Saskatchewan do not use DST. The permanent two-hour difference between Alaska and the Pacific coast and the lower 48, which existed when DST was first used in Alaska, was reduced to 1 hour with the creation of the current Alaska time zone. Communications technology now allows commercial transactions to be conducted 24/7. Personal convenience is simply not a compelling reason to mandate use of DST by every Alaskan. Lastly, is the clear and compelling reason to use daylight saving time that it is popular with Alaskans? No. Both formal and informal public surveys show a clear majority of Alaskans either favor the outright end of DST or have no opinion. Four previous bills calling for outright repeal and a committee substitute bill asking for a statewide referendum have been introduced but blocked in various committees. I will conclude by reading a letter to the Fairbanks News Miner from a Mr. and Mrs. Underwood, published on Friday, April 3rd, 2009.
Mr. Willis, is that going to be a long letter to the editor?
It's just a paragraph. I'll summarize it. They say they support the repeal. A lack of sleep may be to blame for the Swedish study that says there's an increase in heart attack cited in the Reader's Digest. And the final sentence is, as elderly people, we find it aggravates our health problems. Please pressure to repeal. I think you owe these people an explanation if you oppose House Bill 19. We have used DST in Alaska since 1967. 42 years later, much has changed, and we simply don't need this law any longer. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Willis. Next, I'll go to Nome, Jim Adams. Jim, could you state your name and affiliation, and just keep it to 1 minute, please, and I apologize for kind of squashing you on the time for your preparation. Before you start, I wanted to recognize and give a warm welcome to Mr. Masters, who is Commissioner of Public Safety. He has joined us today, so welcome to you. Go ahead, Mr. Adams.
My name is Jim Adams, ADEMS. I live in Nome. I urge support of House Bill 19 for the repeal of daylight saving in Alaska. They talk about energy stuff. One of them is lots of people turn the heat down in the evening, and if you move the clock up, you got to turn the heat up sooner, that sort of thing. So, and on a personal note, I was lucky enough to go on a cruise here about 4 or 5 years ago, and we got on the boat, and captain said, on a big announcement, says, we're going off daylight saving time. And everybody said, yay! So let's get back to real time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Adam. Now we'll go to Cordova, Faith Barnes. Faith, are you off net?
I am here, Madam Chairman.
Okay, could you state your name and affiliation and try to keep it to under 2 minutes?
My name is Faith Barnes. My affiliation is Delph. I am in favor of Alaska being exempt from daylight savings time, House Bill number 19. I think time changes contribute to sleeping disorders, depression, and obesity in adults and children. If you have a hard time sleeping already, changing times is difficult. It's just another obstacle to overcome. Time changes contribute to depression and obesity because a lack of sleep can add to or cause depression. Depression can add to or cause eating disorders such as obesity in our children and ourselves. Health should come before business. As more states exempt daylight savings time, the more states will follow. Alaska should do what is best for their people by exempting daylight savings time and being a leader and not a follower. Thank you.
Thank you. And according to my list, we have given everybody that was signed up an opportunity to speak on this. So I am going to go ahead and close public testimony. To my fellow committee members, do you have any questions or comments? No, seeing none. What is the will of the committee on this bill? Senator Meyer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let's see, this bill has a couple more committees to go to, so I'd like to move it out of this committee. So I would move CS for House Bill 19, Labor and Commerce, from the State Affairs Committee onto the next committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Okay, thank you, Senator Myers. Do I hear any objection from committee members? Seeing none, I'll go ahead and move CHHJR 10, Committee Substitute for House Joint Resolution 10, moves out of, Committee Substitute for House Bill 19. And are there any? And that would be it. They'll go to the next committee. Okay. We'll take a brief at ease. I'm wearing